This is Rob Chase, and I'm running for 4th District State Legislature here in the Spokane Valley. And it was kind of a strange year. I started out running for Congress, and I was going to challenge Kathy McMorris Rogers. And then suddenly, you know, the campaign is going. It was kind of rocky because of COVID. Things started about the same time I started my campaign. But it ended up kind of changing. My intent was, of course, to run for Congress, but I'm running for legislature. And the story behind that is I was approached by Matt Shea, our representative in the Valley, and he said some people had approached him wanting him to run against Kathy McMorris because he probably stood a better chance than I did, and I agreed with that too. So, and then he said, then you can run for my spot. So as it was, we decided all to file at the same time, 3:30 on Friday. A filing date kind of at the very end there. So I went ahead and filed for Matt's position. And then Bob McCaslin also ran, you know, the seatmate of Matt's from the 4th District also signed up at the same time. So it kind of caused a lot of confusion, I think. About 4:05, Matt Shea called me and I said, well, how'd the filing go? And I said, well, I didn't get filed. That was I was floored. I just couldn't, you know, I was really surprised by that. He said something came up. And when I explain it to you here in a couple of weeks, you'll understand. So actually, it turns out he's going to go into the ministry. So, I guess Kathy gets a free one on that. But she did have $2 million in her kitty, you know, so she would have been pretty hard to defeat anyway. So, but I'm glad to run for 4th District Legislator. I'm starting to get my mind turned around. It's kind of like a brain cramp to go from concentrating on national politics to state politics again too, but I've been an activist for a long time, so I kind of understand a lot of the things and that are there. So I'm a conservative, so I do believe we need to still cut spending. We spend too much. We have to find the right equilibrium, I think, between spending and so that our revenues don't start turning down because people are taxed too much. And also, I'm behind the 51st state movement like Matt Shea, and I believe if elected, Bob McCaslin and I will also introduce that legislation again together, because I think, for instance, in Eastern Washington, we cannot elect a governor or a U.S. senator, you know, so we don't have really representation that way. So, and also, I think starting with a clean slate with a state constitution would be a real fun challenge to work on.
Help me understand what you just said. You can't elect a senator or governor. Help me to understand that.
Okay, because if you say you go to the Space Needle and you go on top, with the naked eye, you can see the majority of voters in the state. And, of course, the West Side is predominantly Democrat. So we always have a Democrat governor, at least since Dan Evans. And we always have, it seems for a long time, we've had two Democratic U.S. senators. Whereas if we had our own state, we could probably elect a governor and two U.S. senators, you know, who would identify more with Eastern Washington's political worldview.
Okay. So before we get to the legislative race, I won't ask you to talk about Matt's motivations, but what were your motivations for running against Kathy McMorris Rogers?
Well, I believe in rotation in office. She was there. You know, I think she's going on, it'll be her, eighth term. And maybe ninth term. So actually, I believe in term limits, not like they had in the contract with America back in 1994. I think they had three terms, you know, in the House, but I don't think that's enough. But I think any position should be limited to 12 years. So a U.S. senator would be two terms, and a say someone like former county treasurer, I would have done three terms, 12 years, and then and anybody that went to legislature would have 6 2-year terms, so 12 years all the way around, you know, because people, I think, start gathering moss, become less effective, you know, then they're just marking time to be in that position. Doesn't mean they can't run for something else. But also, I believe that the president should have a 6-year term, because then he doesn't have to worry about reelection. You know, he doesn't have to be walking on eggshells, and he can do what he thinks is best for the country. And I read a book on, I think it's by Thomas Woods, on the best and the worst presidents. And the best presidents got everything that was good that is accomplished, mostly in their first term. So I think a 6-year term would work out well.
So you've had previous practical experience. You just alluded to your time as county treasurer. You've run for other offices, both as a Republican and a Libertarian. How will your previous political experience and running as a candidate help you as a legislator?
Well, I know, gosh, a lot of the people in the legislature, almost everybody from Eastern Washington and several on the other side, too. So, you know, a lot of them, I think I get along with all of them pretty much. I actually got legislation passed in 2013 for the first time in state history. Spokane County residents, you know, can pay their property taxes any amount, any time. And before that, you could only pay twice a year. And the way I got it passed was that it was up to discretion of the county treasurer. So as it still stands, I'm the only county treasurer, you know, it's still, and Michael Baumgartner actually kept the same policy when he took my place in the state. It's the only county, but it's a wonderful idea. People all loved it. The taxpayers loved it. And, you know, when I go to, if I go to the legislature, I'm also going to work on getting rid of the penalties on property tax, because as it is, it's 12% annual rate if you're behind your property taxes. But in the third month, there's a in the second month, there's a 3% penalty. In the ninth month, there's an 8% penalty. So you add, you know, 12 and 3 and 8. It's I think it's 23%. Someone who's behind on their taxes is paying, and that's usury. So that should not be allowed. They should just pay 12% simplest. And actually, the county never loses any money, because if they go all the way 3 years without a payment, go into foreclosure, the minimum bid at the foreclosure auction is all the past due property taxes and interest and title search.
So if you go to Olympia as a legislator, you're looking at a pretty difficult budget situation due to coronavirus and the state's response to it and all that. How would you approach narrowing a multi-billion dollar budget gap and balancing a budget again?
Well, you just have to cut waste. You know, you look at every activity. Does it add value or does it add waste? You know, and I think the COVID virus thing was a huge mistake. If I could have been elected commissioner 2 years, I think I probably could have stopped a lot of the damage from that, you know, because, you know, people who are well don't need to be quarantined. Just the sick people need to be quarantined. So I would have had it, you know, people could voluntarily do whatever they wanted, you know, because the hidden cost of all this too isn't just the budget. It's all the shops and people who are already in trouble, you know, that are going to close down because of this. And that's that adds, you know, suicide, despair, divorces, and everything else, the hidden costs of all this. And, you know, you didn't have a policeman on every corner enforcing putting these useless masks, you know, on people. It should have all been voluntary. If you had a business, you know, you could have opened if you wanted to, or kept it closed. And if you wanted to, you could have, you know, gone to that business or not gone to that business too. So I think the best government is self-government.
So I'm gonna push you a little on your mask, not the mask, but the saying that the healthy people are the ones who should be allowed to. Sometimes the healthy people are the people carrying the virus. How do you think the governor has handled the coronavirus situation? What's your opinion about that?
Well, I think he overreacted. You know, about the same time that these we all started, you know, putting on masks and quarantine ourselves. That was maybe in March. About the same time, a lot of medical people were coming out saying the masks didn't do very much good, and didn't block out coronavirus even. And they were actually unhealthier, you know, by breathing your own bacteria and taking your mask off with your fingers. People didn't know how to use them, and it seemed like, you know, the whole thing wasn't any worse than any other virus we've had that goes up, you know, around every year. And the statistics, you know, depending on who you were listening, too, kept changing all around, too. So I don't think I just think he just overreacted, and the hidden costs of all of this outweigh any good that might have been done.
So how do you balance that notion between the costs of closing down an economy or putting restrictions on people's individual liberties versus the fact that those things might keep people alive? I mean, talk about that ethical balance.
Think so. I mean, most people that were that died from this or affected adversely were a lot older people that probably wouldn't be going. In fact, in a couple states, they actually put them in rest homes, and they're their casualty rate from this rose, but a lot of the younger people didn't have it. So, you know, I just say, when you look at the balance, if it's true, as I suspect, that it really wasn't worse than a lot of other, you know, viruses going around were, then shutting down the whole economy and, you know, hurting a lot of people financially that couldn't afford it is a lot worse, you know, not to mention all the, you know, social values and everything that came along with that. And like I said, there is no one, you know, it seems like places that didn't enforce it that much may even have been, you know, lower in the number of people that caught it.
Are there still restrictions in Spokane County that you think should be lifted immediately?
Yeah, I think everything should be voluntary, you know. So actually, when I was county treasurer, I filed a thing called coordination, which is actually a federal law. If a higher power, like an agency or the federal government, is doing something that affects your county adversely, you can force them to coordinate with you. And coordination is not cooperation. You have veto power over it. So, and the Avista thing is, you know, there's absolutely no beneficial effect from selling out to Hydro One of Canada, except unless you were a board, member of the board of directors or a stockholder of it. So I filed coordination against that. I think I could have done it again with the county commissioners here, if I'd been one, with the county commissioners against the governor, because it's federal law and he has to obey federal law. And so, when coordination has been used, they've never lost.
Yeah. So let me go back to the question of if, going back to the opening up of the economy, if there are people who are asked to go back to work, but they don't feel comfortable because of the situation, should they be required to go back to work, or should they be allowed to continue to stay away from work and be paid? How do you feel about that?
Gosh, that's you know, I believe in volunteerism and freedom. Young people have the freedom not to go back to work, but, you know, if they're essential or if their company needs them, you know, if everything's normal and they refuse to come to work, they don't have a job, you know, after that. So that's something, you know, I'd have to think about more, sure. But I would say, you know, if you're going to fire someone who doesn't feel comfortable, they feel their life is threatened, maybe that's the cost they have to pay to, you know, keep out of harm's way. Or, you know, if I felt they were wrong about it, a company I worked for, and, you know, I would leave them. I wouldn't want a company that didn't respect me and didn't want me back. And plus, I think this is, you know, a temporary thing. I think it's starting to die out now anyway, so it wouldn't have been that long. It depends on what you're doing, how essential it was to that company. And of course, you can take these precautions anyway if you come back to work.
Can I just, you just made a remark about you think it's dying out. What do you think is dying out?
Well, I think as the weather gets better, you know, I wonder if you have these viruses, it's usually during the cold and flu season. So now the sun's out, you've got your vitamin D going, and people that were out in the, you know, in the outdoors, I think, seem to have done a lot better than people who'd stayed home and, you know, didn't leave their house. That's an unhealthy situation.
Okay. So let's go to the state has created a task force that's going to look at police reforms. If I were read things right, where do you how do you come down on the George Floyd situation? Were police in Minneapolis wrong to behave, or at least the officers that were involved in that, were they wrong to behave in that way to cause the death of George Floyd?
Well, certainly the one was that had his knee on the guy's neck, you know, and I think he was, you know, saying he couldn't breathe and everything. Well, they should have. By that time, he's subdued anyway. So I thought that was definitely overreach on that policeman's part. And his other three partners that they were probably should have, you know, told him to, hey, you know, take a chill pill and, you know, let the guy up until he gets his breath back anyway. But, you know, that's one, this thing happens probably, you know, hundreds of times a day all across America. This kind of became like a rallying point, you know, and I think something incident like that was just kind of waiting to happen. And then suddenly it's all over the news, and kind of like the Rodney King thing, you know, it happened, what, 20 years ago or so.
And then how do you feel about the resulting calls for, let's say, bans on chokeholds and that sort of thing? Where, at what point in government, where is that the most appropriate for government to put those kinds of regulations on? Is it a state matter? Is it a local matter? How do you view that?
I think it's, might be up to a judge, you know, because everything's different. I mean, how do you write a law for that? There's kind of too much legislation. I mean, if you have an officer who's, this guy had behaved terribly, I guess, over the years, they never done anything about it, then I don't know how a law, you know, what's too much force, you know, to use. It's, you know, it depends. Every situation is different. You have to be able to hire policemen who are well trained and sympathetic and, you know, to the people and can understand these things. So I think probably in a policeman's career, if he's that way, he probably starts showing things fairly early, you know, and they can maybe assign him to, a beat or something to go on or something else, you know.
So let's place you in the state house. Would you consider, do you think that's the right place for you to consider things like bans on chokeholds, opening up more transparency when it comes to police officers who've been disciplined, that sort of thing? Is that something that you would support as a state legislator?
Well, I'd have to see what was written. You know, I'm open to anything. I would read everything that comes through and then use my own worldview. But I think, you know, we should err on the side of less regulation, especially when it's so hard to quantify. We got too many rules now, which I think is, you know, a lot of our problems.
Yeah. So let me, there are a couple other issues that have been before the legislature in the last year or so, and I'll just hit you with those. Do you support the $30 car tabs initiative?
Yes. That was my very first activist thing. And I think 1998, when Tim Eyman, went around, and we actually, for people, you know, actually it's fairly poor with, you know, wife and kids that time. And if you're to get a good car that got you to work and everything, man, it was like a 13th car payment on top of the other one, you know? So then, and that plus what it was all used for, it kind of gotten away from, you know, just being used for roads too. So I thought, I was glad when that passed, you know, and, but it also, you know, got me hooked on, if people that pass these things, you know, they need to act like it's their own money, you know, okay, put yourself in everybody's position. Is that adding value or not, you know, because the spending is so terrible. I think they're adding a lot of waste to things too. So if we can at least fight back, you know, and go back to $30 permits. I mean, I remember when I was working at the same time too, a lady, her husband had left her and she had kids and everything. And someone had sold her a lemon and it broke down and they fired her because she didn't make it to work. You know, she needed that job. So I remember, too, regulation wise, when I didn't have health insurance, my kids would get an earache and you had to go to buy the pink medicine and go to the doctor. This is like in 1980s, it was $73. Well, that was all my disposable income, you know, if even that for an entire month, you know, when that had happened. But, it seemed like it probably cost them pennies a thing to make that pink medicine. But that's another big thing is the costs of health insurance. And too, I mean, there should be more competition in that.
So how the car tabs helped with transportation funding around the state? Are there other forms of, whether you call it taxation, fees, whatever you want to call it, in order to raise more money so that things like the North-South Freeway can be finished and highways around the state?
Well, yeah, I think you can use tolls. You know, people that actually use those streets or bridges, you know, are using it, and you know. We had the Maple Street Bridge for a long time. The amazing thing was once it was paid off, they didn't keep, I'm surprised that they didn't keep the toll on it, you know, for more revenue. That was something that worked. And also, I support a state bank too, like North Dakota has an infrastructure bank. And, you know, like at the county treasurer's office, we actually, our balance of that we invest like in mostly treasuries instead of, you know, that we could have used it for like a state infrastructure bank, keeping our money there. And then, you know, the interest we got would go back to building things. And actually with fractional reserve banking, you can actually get nine times as much, but I would keep it to infrastructure. I know North Dakota gets into student loans and things like, and also the fracking industry, you know, a lot of that came from North Dakota, but I think if you just, you know, keep it mainly for highway projects, so we got safe highway, that would be great.
So we'll stay with the taxing measure. Lands Commissioner Hillary Franz proposed it was like a $5 surcharge on liability insurance premiums to create a wildfire prevention and wildfire fighting fund. Is that an approach that you support? Should the state be spending more money on wildfire prevention and that sort of thing?
Well, it depends on what they already have. I don't know if they must fund it maybe through the general fund or something, part of it. Maybe they don't have enough money. So you'd have to see, is it meeting the needs of protecting from wildfires, or is it just, extra pork?
Okay, and then there's one other thing I've been asking folks about. The death penalty came up again in the legislature in 2020. Are you what's your position on the death penalty?
Well, I favor the death penalty.
Okay.
And I think it fulfills a sense of justice. For instance, I was upset that Robert Yates didn't hang, for all the stuff he had done. And I know if you've got a death penalty, I think the last person went down to Walla Walla, I actually got to take a tour of the execution room. And the guy there said, I think the last person that was executed was in 1994. I think there's people, if they're, caught cold and all the evidence is against them and all that, they should forfeit their lives for that. And that's a good way of keeping, people, a good example to other people to live a clean life. And, so especially the younger people, I remember, Spokane County Courthouse there, the last hanging, I think it was in 1900, and right in the courthouse yard there. And, maybe that'd be kind of gruesome for kids, but it's also a good lesson for kids, too. And it fulfills a sense of justice. And that's one of the roles of government.
So, Rob, we're about 23 minutes in. I wanted to give you the chance to talk about issues that are important to you, things that you'd be working on in Olympia.
Well, I think, of course, I said that I'd be behind the 51st state again, but also, wherever we can save unnecessary taxes and unnecessary regulations, I'd be looking at all those things and help people keep their money. It's better for, there's like a, someone once said, if you say you won the lottery, but the caveat was you had to give it to a charitable institution. Well, which branch of government would you give it to? Well, they wouldn't. They would give it to their favorite charitable institution because it doesn't go through all the bureaucracy and everything. And finally, by the time it filters down to the people it actually is for, it's half or less of what they actually get. So I think that's why I'm against too much taxation, and especially, what's going on with the federal government, the federal government and all this spending. A lot of times these affect states. It's not just something the federal government does. It affects jobs, nationwide. And so I'm all for transparency, too, of the money that's coming in and going back out again. I ran against George Nethercutt in 2002 as a libertarian. At that time, the U.S. debt, I think, had gotten up to $6 trillion, the debt. And now it's, they're spending like drunken pirates now. It's up to like $25 trillion. And there's another $21 trillion missing from Department of Defense and HUD that they can't even find. So, the more transparency I try to do at the county, too, the better, so that people can see what's actually being spent and whether it's being added. And then also, always loved people coming in and giving me their thoughts from all across the spectrum. I've done a lot of common cause things, worked with the progressives, against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And we even, visited Kathy McMorris and tried to talk her out of supporting it, which didn't work. But she did give Obama fast track to, go ahead with that. But then when Trump got in, it was good that he got rid of it because it would have hurt, American sovereignty. And there was, I forget how many thousands, it was 2,000 pages longer than the Affordable Care Act, just the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So federal things also affected. So I'd work with my federal counterparts, my local counterparts too. And, at the state level, the states actually have a lot of power, per the 10th Amendment. So I'm all for getting back to the Constitution, U.S. Constitution, but also the 51st state, we could do a lot of things that would be popular on the east side of the state. For instance, I'm also for instant runoff voting too, where that gives a chance for independents or green or libertarian parties to have a shot at things. It gets rid of the wasted vote syndrome that we have. And I can think really of, a lot of things that are common cause, especially instant runoff voting and a state bank. And I would look, speaking to everybody, I always had, when I was treasurer, I saw anybody who wanted to see me. And if they had any kind of problem, if I couldn't answer the question, I would find out who could. And they never left my office without an answer, yes or no, and knowing why.
So let me finish you, since you talked about the 51st state. It's been on the agenda since the father of the current Representative Bob McCaslin, Senator Bob McCaslin, was pushing it years ago. Why do you think it has any more cachet now than it did a generation ago?
Well, I think because of the COVID thing, we would have probably a governor who, like the governor we had in South Dakota, that didn't enforce anything. It was all volunteerism. And, like I said, we could start our own, draft our own state constitution. One thing that bothers me, too, is this mandatory vaccination thing. I think, a person's body, belongs to themselves. And so I believe in the vaccination freedom thing. And, I don't like mandatory anything. If we're going to make a mistake, it should be on the side of freedom. Plus, I think there's a lot of bad things about vaccines. You don't hear about them because, big pharma controls, a lot has a control thing. So there's actually a vaccine damage court that's paid out billions of dollars, at the federal level. And but it's all the proceedings are kept secret. You can't find out why. And it isn't, the big pharmaceutical companies that pay for it. It's U.S. taxpayers, pay for this, too. And it's very hard to get past, but it is out there. There's a lot of, you just can't. Big pharma is so big and so allowed to do so many things that there's a moral hazard if they're not going to be punished for things. Same thing with the big banks, too. I think 2008 was probably the biggest swindle of American people that's ever been happened before. And we're almost in the same situation. In fact, the situation now is even worse. So I have, high hopes for Trump. At least he wanted to make America great again. But I'm afraid, we might end up defaulting on all of this debt sometime. And that's going to cause a lot of heartache and anguish to people too. So you got to keep them, when you're, the states created the federal government and the states created the counties that are like right in between. So it's a big responsibility to be there, but you have to be familiar with both with federalism, at the national level and the local level too.